Hello, everyone. Welcome into the Young Lads Podcast, episode 33. Peter DeFeet Jr. On this side, Harris Eisenberg over in the New York, Long Island area. Just got done with his Maccabee game tryout for the singular person that decided to show up to the gym. So
classified as a tryout. Workout. You know, classified as a tryout. They made the team. Congratulations. So, a successful one-man tryout to start. Hopefully there's more to come.
Hey, well, listen, if the broadcasting career doesn't work out, you can always be a basketball coach.
There you go. Basketball
little
coach.
Personal training.
Did some baseball coaching last year. You know, got to find my way to break into that a little bit. But, that's definitely an option. Definitely an option.
Well, something that might not be an option, and we'll get right into it, is Lucas Giolito throwing for the Boston Red Sox this year yesterday, which was Tuesday, depending on what time, what day or time you're listening to this. It's currently Wednesday, 1:40 hour time on March 6th. But the Red Sox likely done for the season with a partially torn UCL and flexor strain. That's, again, Lucas Giolito. He's getting a second opinion as we speak, or, you know, during this week, whenever, again, you're listening to this. But likely done for the season. This is a team that already traded away Chris Sale. They've been kind of talking Jordan Montgomery, but you're going to count on now Cutter Crawford, Nick Pivetta, Winkowski. So you're already losing one of your big free agent signings. If you don't sign Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell, which I don't think they will, you could possibly be looking at a 90-loss Boston Red Sox team. And, oh, by the way, they're having like a Hard Knocks type of documentary, or not documentary, but a Hard Knocks in-season type of deal for this season. So not looking good for the mighty Boston Red Sox.
Think about the horrible year-plus that Lucas Giolito has had. Last year, he was on three teams, including that Angels team for 1 month that, you know, decided to buy at the trade deadline, and it absolutely spiraled into all hell. He also gave up the most home runs of any pitcher last year. So it wasn't exactly the greatest year for Lucas Giolito. And what happens to superstars who are out of their prime? They get picked up by the cheap Boston Red Sox, because that's what the Red Sox are these days. They're just cheap. And Giolito now comes out of it. Like you said, the injury. There is no shot that this guy throws this year, in my opinion, especially in what is already going to be a lost year for the Boston Red Sox. So again, you know, these Boston fans who kept chirping in my ear over the last few weeks, yeah, don't be surprised if we have a good year. No, they're delusion. Absolutely delusion. I mean, there is no pitching on this team. Zero. No bullpen. No starter. I mean, last year, Corey Kluber was the opening day starter. So just referencing that. You know, it's just, it's a bad spiral for the Red Sox. And obviously, as an organizational trend, I mean, everyone wants to say, oh, yeah, the Red Sox are being cheap just in this little span of time. But guys, like, I don't know if you've gotten the vibe of this, Peter. Have the Red Sox really ever landed the big fish for a long period of time? I mean, I hate to get off topic with the Giolito thing. Obviously, it's bad news, but the big story of the Red Sox this offseason is how, you know, ownership is being really cheap. I mean, look at the past superstars they got. You know, David Ortiz, they picked up off of waivers. I'm going way back. Manny Ramirez was a scrub in Cleveland. Jason Bay, they only had for a year and a half. He went on to sign elsewhere. Adrian Beltre spent 1 year with the Red Sox, led the league in doubles, and finished out with a great career with the Texas Rangers. Victor Martinez only spent a year and a half there before having some nice years in Detroit. So what I'm saying is,
Cespedes.
You can go back to A-Rod, too, and how the Red Sox thought that they were getting A-Rod, and that didn't happen. So this is not something new that Red Sox fans should be complaining about. And maybe they've gotten a little cheap this time around, but this is, you know, do people really want to come to Boston, where if you look at the last couple years, you know, things have kind of been, you know, pretty rocky ever since they won the World Series in 2018. You know, this has not been a consistent ball club by any means.
Yeah, and you're forgetting maybe two of the bigger name pitchers too, in Chris Sale and David Price. But Chris Sale was a trade with the White Sox that gave up. Oh my God, what's his name? Yoan Moncada.
Yeah,
he was the big piece that went over to the White Sox, and really, you know, just to get off tangent a little bit, we don't know what he's going to be like because he was up and down in AAA last year. But then David Price was the last big free agent signing. Maybe Craig Kimbrel too. But like you said, after 2018, it's kind of just been a slow spiral of trading away pieces and getting rid of guys more than it is adding guys. The last, also, Yoshi, is the only free agent that was like a big name guy that they've gotten. I mean, they got rid of Xander Bogaerts, or they just didn't sign him back. They traded away Mookie Betts for Alex Verdugo, who, by the way, is now with the Yankees. And I believe it. I believe that team, or I believe that trade also consisted of Jeter Downs, who's now with the Yankees, and somebody else, but I forgot who else was in that trade package. I don't think anybody else is there though. Who else? You traded away Chris Sale this offseason, who, by the way, looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
With the Atlanta Braves so far. To your point, Corey Kluber was your opening day starter, which, you know, all thanks to Corey Kluber and for him signing my baseball, but he's not an opening day starter anymore. Who else? JD Martinez you let walk. Who else? I mean,
yeah, you could just go to the team overalls. Like, this is an organization that clearly, even in the periods that they've won the World Series, let's open this up a little bit. Let's go to an 11-year stretch from 2013 on. What happened in 2013? They won the World Series, right? They don't re-sign Jacoby Ellsbury, which was probably a good non-signing. But anyways, you win the World Series in 2013, and then you finish at the bottom of the barrel the next 2 years and just accept the mediocrity. 2018, you win the World Series. 2019 doesn't go well. All right, trade Mookie Betts. You're superstar. Like, that's your guy. MVP. Mookie Betts. 2021, they go on a Cinderella run. Nobody expected it. You know, the Rays, I mean, you were probably expecting the Rays to wipe the floor with the Red Sox in that first round series back in 2021. But the Sox had a little run in them, you know, with that lineup with J.D. Martinez and Bogaerts and Devers, and Schwarber was there at the time. They don't even make an effort to re-sign Schwarber. And then in 2022, they kind of offload a little bit. And then 2023, last year, was a disaster. And now this year's probably going to be another miserable year, too. It's so confusing with the direction of this Red Sox organization. Like, do they even care to have a nice, sustainable period of winning? You know, one flash in the pan World Series, is that it? Is that all you're really going for? So, that's just kind of my opinion on the organization, man. I mean, they've kind of just accepted mediocrity and kind of just brushed away the fans. Which makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we're forgetting about another big free agent. Big, I use in air quotations. If you're just listening to us, I made air quotes with my fingers. But Trevor Story, but he has not been healthy the last couple of years that he's signed. If he's healthy, the left side of that defense is really good with Devers at third and Story at short, even though Devers did lead the league in third base errors. They have Vaughn Grisham now to shore up shortstop, so maybe move Trevor Story to second base. But just, I'm looking at this roster, and it's like, nobody scares me other than Devers. And you can work around Devers. Because, I mean, Tristan Casas, yeah, he had a really good second half of the season last year, but he's still young. People are going to have a lot more tape on him now, so let's see what he does, you know, now that everybody's got tape on him. Tyler O'Neill. Okay, Rob Refschneider is going to be probably starting in center field for you on opening day. Yoshida, and then who else? So, and then with the starting rotation, now you got Lucas Giolito out. You're relying on Brian Bello, who was good last year, but he's still 24 years old. You're relying on him to be your ace because Cutter Crawford's going to be your ace. Cooper Criswell, who the Rays offloaded last year, is going to be your ace. I mean, they signed Liam Hendricks to shore up the back end of the bullpen. Tanner Houck, is he going to even be in the starting rotation? I mean, you look at this roster, and it's like, I just don't know what they're doing, to your point. Yeah, it's weird to know that the Red Sox in the early 2000s, even early 2010s, were this team that were just getting everybody, and now it seems like they're offloading everybody.
I'll be interested to see what they do next offseason. I want to look at this as kind of a long-term scenario because, you know, when Devers got to camp, he essentially called out the management and was like, clearly this team needs to get better. Clearly they need to do more. So when your superstar that you pay the big bucks calls you out like that, I feel like you got to respond in some way. And if the Sox don't, then, I mean, then we know the direction of this organization. Now, they still have time to do it because, hey, Blake Snell's still out there. Jordan Montgomery's still out there. But it doesn't look like the Red Sox are willing to spend the money. Hasn't looked like ever they've been willing to spend the money. So just another detriment. And, you know, obviously Giolito, yes, big loss. Don't want to take away from that. But just overall as an organization, just the philosophy of it is just, I just don't think it's correct.
Yeah, and speaking of, I don't know if you heard this the other day, what Chris Bryant said about the Colorado Rockies. I mean, you were mentioning big free agents, and we were talking about them. Did you hear what he said about basically regretting signing with the Rockies? He had other teams that were interested, but felt like he needed to be in camp, so he just signed basically with the first team that offered him the most money. He's making $27 million a year. He signed a 7-year, $182 million contract. That was in, what, 2022?
Right before
the beginning of that year. Yeah. So this will be year three of that contract. And this is the exact quote from the article. It's like, oh, shoot, I need to get there, meaning spring training. There were other teams interested, but I didn't want to wait around. It was a completely different situation for a lot of free agents at the time. I guess I didn't do too much research into the prospects as I could, end quote. And I'm reading that, and I'm like, first of all, it's a little bit of both parties' faults as far as Chris Bryant and Scott Boras go. Because, like, how do you not know what the Colorado Rockies have been for the last 10 years? Since 2009, I think they've made the playoffs 1 year, and that was in 2017 when they lost to the Arizona Diamondbacks in the wild card round. Back when it was only a 1-game wild card round. Other than that, they have been bad. Like, their pitching staff has been terrible. They can't find a guy that can stay healthy or have a sub-4 ERA in that ballpark. And they traded away guys like Trevor Story, Nolan Arenado, and have nobody left in that team. Carlos Gonzalez they let walk. You talk about a team that has let their superstars just walk for nothing. Or just gotten rid of guys and made bad trades and whatnot. I mean, I think the lone bright spot the last couple of years was Ubaldo Jimenez for the Colorado Rockies, I think, of that 2017 season. So I mean, I don't know what to make of those comments. Like, I mean, it's his whole damn fault.
To me, I can appreciate the honesty because you got to look at that time too. Right before the lockout, you don't know what's going to happen, right? You don't know how long the lockout's going to go. You might as well get the contract negotiations over with and signed somewhere. So I understand the desperation at that time, and I can appreciate the honesty. That's all we want to hear as fans and as podcasters. We love honesty. But, you know, I think you and I can see from a naked eye, Denver, we're East Coast guys. Denver's pretty far away. But we know, we're not dumb, that the Rockies have been historically terrible. I mean, you let go of Nolan Arenado to sign Chris Bryant. Obviously, that's not a direct long-term plan by the Rockies. But does that make any sense? If you're going to throw that money at Chris Bryant, why not just re-sign your franchise third baseman instead of trade him to St. Louis? Which I don't even know what the Rockies got in return because I don't think anything has worked out for the Rockies since they offloaded Arenado and let Cargo walk. So, yeah, listen, the Rockies have always been an organization of mediocrity, man. I mean, they had a decent little run at the late 2000s when, you know, they made a World Series and you know, had Troy Tulowitzki and Todd Helton, but, you know, Tulo always hurt. You know, Carlos Gonzalez was a nice bat for years. And, you know, Matt Holliday, touching or not touching home plate, you know, who knows? But, yeah, that's an organization of mediocrity right there. I mean, the Sox and the Rockies, very similar.
So I just looked up the trade from January 29th of this year. They were revisiting the Nolan Arenado trade 3 years later. So the guys that they got, the Rockies got Mateo Gil, Jake Sommers, Tony Losi, I don't know how to say that last name, Austin Gomber, who I've actually heard of, and Elijuris Montero. Let's see. So they're talking about Let's see, I'm just trying to look. So Gomber,
I think the only thing that guy's known for is having the wife who does the TikToks. Have you seen those? Have you seen those? That's the only reason why I know who that is, by the way.
But he's got a 5.22 ERA and a 4.89 FIP, which aren't good. Let's see. Montero's only 25, but in his first 138 games, he's now moved from third base to first base, and he's got a 35% strikeout rate.
Lovely.
And he's a negative WAR player. Jake Sommers, 26 years old, pitched 42 innings since the trade. The highest level he's reached is high A in 2021. He's 26 years old.
Terrible. Yeah, you don't see a lot of 26-year-olds in high A.
25-year-old pitcher who is no longer with the Rockies organization. The highest he got was double A. And Mateo Gil is a 23-year-old infielder who's in high A right now, but is now in the Mets organization.
Lovely.
So a guy with a 5.2 ERA, somebody with a negative WAR and 35% strikeout rate, somebody that's only in high A and is 26 years old, and two guys that aren't even with the organization anymore. And the best player has been Gomber. He's got a B WAR of 1.1. Montero was the only guy that reached the majors.
Well, hey, if you want any promise in the Rockies organization, you got two Tennessee boys in your top five prospects in Chase Dolander and Jordan Beck, but even that's going to take about, 3 or 4 years. But they'll probably trade them too.
But, I mean, all of that to say that obviously it was a one-sided trade.
Yes.
And Chris Bryant, if you're looking back to it, all just to wrap up to what he said, where he's like, oh, shoot, I have to get into spring training. Why not just sign a shorter deal with somebody to stay with, like, the Giants? The Giants were really good in 2021, won 107 games, won the division with you on the team. You still had – did Buster Posey retire after the end of that year? I think he
did. Yes. Yeah.
But you still had Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, Logan Webb was coming up and being really good. You had Yastrzemski that was doing really good in the outfield, and a couple of smaller prospects coming up through the ranks that you could have stuck around for a 2-year deal, 3-year deal, signed for shorter term, maybe even a little bit more money just because it was going to be a shorter term deal, and then got into your next contract sooner. You'd be a free agent again after this year, so you can get more money. But he wanted to go 7 years, 182, but he went with the Colorado Rockies. You're telling me the Yankees or the Cardinals or a team like that wasn't offering five for 150, five for 170, where you could have been like, okay, let me go play for a team that's actually going to be vying for a postseason spot?
Yeah, I mean, it had to be the case. If he says other teams interested, unless he's lying through his teeth, I mean, we hear that a lot about, other teams are interested, but this is the best for me. So I don't know. I have no idea. Again, I understand the desperation with it being the lockout and all. And ultimately, look, Chris Bryant accomplished a lot in his career in a short period of time. Rookie of the year, MVP, and a World Series all within 2 years of being in the big leagues. Not even. So for him to just, want to take as much money as possible, I get it. But if his mindset and motivation was to win, clearly he could have done things a little bit different.
Yeah, and I mean, that all tells you, too, that, you know, what is Scott Boras up to? Because I don't know if you saw the report, but apparently there's a pitching panic that has been more that has had more teams bidding for Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, which I think is just a little bit of publicity to get those guys' names back into rotation as far as news outlets goes. Because if there was such a panic, I think they would have had I think they would have been signed by now.
Would have been done.
Because some team like the Yankees, if they were actually going through a panic, just to put the Yankees out there, would say, okay, we'll give you that extra year and the $10 extra million. So I think if there was really that much of a panic to get the services of these guys, that they would have been signed by now. So yeah, I don't know what to make of that.
I agree with that too. I mean, now that Giolito went down, I mean, I would assume that one of these guys have to go off the board. You know, like the Mets, for example. Like, the Mets are just such a fraudulent organization at this point. But if Kodai Senga, your ace, goes down, don't you think that Steve Cohen, who, you know, probably understands that this year may not be the year, but says, hey, like, let's just get an ace in here. We're going to stink this year anyways, but we'll, you know, give him 5 years and X amount of dollars because I have enough of it to, you know, for this individual to be here so we can compete in the future years. I mean, I just don't get it. I'm so confused. I mean, you know, I go back to the card that we, you know, kind of signed off on a couple months ago. Blake Snell's the only player left on that. And we didn't even include Montgomery in this. But yeah, it's just confusing, man. And the value of these guys, you got to think it's going to get lower as time goes on. Like, the money is not going to be anywhere near 5 years and $130 million like I initially predicted for Blake. So I don't think it's going to be anywhere near that.
No, because what if we get into April or May and they're still unsigned? Why would I give you that extra year?
Yeah.
You know, or I might give you that extra year just because you're losing this year, but I'm not going to give you extra money. It's right. Like, no, like, if you're not going to sign with me, just stay unsigned.
And they're not going to be ready. Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, yeah, they're probably throwing somewhere. Blake Snell's coaching youth baseball in Seattle right now. He's not with a team throwing. Spring training is this long. Not for the hitters, for the pitchers to get ready. So there's a reason why pitchers and catchers report first. And it's a lot different when you're just throwing on your own than when you're with the team, when you're with a different catcher. I know you pitched in college. I know you probably had a great rapport with your catcher. Believe it or not, I pitched a little bit in high school, and I loved the certain guy that I got to throw with behind the plate. And it takes a while, you know? So if these guys are going to go to new teams, and they're probably only going to have, if they sign now, what, 3 weeks to figure it out? 3 spring training starts, if that. No build-up, too. So just, you know, I don't get it. I mean, you got to think Snell and Montgomery are telling Boras, hey, let's just get this done already. Because at this point, they're not going to play. And sitting out a year has clearly become somewhat of a possibility. I don't think it'll happen. But sitting out a year, you just can't do. That's unheard of in baseball. People doing
it,
you know.
You're losing even more years and more money. Like, if Blake Snell wanted to sign a 7-year deal, if he sits out this year, he's not getting a 7-year deal. He'll get a 5-year deal.
Right.
Like, sorry, you should have signed last year. That would have been a sure 6th year. Like, we're not signing you. You're going to be another year older. You didn't play last year. So we don't know what your stuff is going to be like after you have to revamp up and now redo everything, basically, that you did. It's like, I'm not giving you that extra year, and I'm certainly not giving you that extra money.
Yeah.
And your credit, tomorrow is 3 weeks until spring training, until opening day.
Yeah. The only player that I can remember who did something like this recently, but for reason, was Conforto. But he was actually hurt. And didn't tell anybody until the end of the season that he missed and ended up signing a decent deal with the Giants. But that's a hitter, too. Like, you can hit in the cage and get live ABs all you want outside of spring training. It's just totally different. And I was going to say, like, this happens in other sports. It happens in hockey all the time. It happens in football. But, you know, baseball's just not doable. I just don't think it is.
But if you think about it, too, with football, like, people sitting out, like Chris Jones last year sat out the first game of the season, sat out training camp. It's like, if you think about it, it's reversed from what baseball and what football is. Football, you're practicing all week long.
Yeah.
And playing that 1 week for training camp or for preseason football. It's the complete opposite thing around for baseball. You're playing all week long and practicing before. So it's right. It's like you said, it's different. Chris Jones was still doing what they do every single day for football. He just wasn't playing the game.
Joe Flacco showed up 3 weeks left and won comeback player of the year.
Yeah. I mean, he was literally legitimately sitting on his couch and they said, hey, Joe, we need you, you know, we need you to lead us to the playoffs.
Yeah. But you can't do that in baseball. You can't.
There's too much that you have to do to ramp up because it's not just, okay, you play one game and then you can practice and heal up, you know, for a week long or so, or even 2 weeks if you're on a bye week. It's you got to play every day. You have a certain regimen that you have to do to make sure that your arm stays in shape, you know, for your next start. And you're not going to be able to make, like you said, but three starts this spring. And that's not enough to ramp up. That's not enough to get you from zero to 105 pitches in a game.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And yeah, innings too. I mean, it's, you know, you see it with the starters now. It starts at two innings and it builds up to three, then four, then five, then six. And yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. But speaking of ramping up and I guess pitchers who won't be ramping up, at least right now, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, going to start the year on the IL. The Mets are right. The Mets are right. That's a joke. But yeah, Justin Verlander starts his back-to-back years, by the way. Justin Verlander starts the season on the IL. I believe is it back-to-back years for Scherzer? Maybe, because he didn't start opening day last year. So,
but did he start on the IL?
He might have. I would assume he did if he wasn't starting opening day for the Mets.
That would make sense, yeah.
Yeah. Which, this is big for the Mets, because I think there's a threshold. I think if Verlander throws 140 innings this year, I think the Mets have to pay his, like, $17 million vesting option. That could be the wrong term, but I know they have to pay some sort of money if Justin Verlander throws 140 innings. So, yeah, I guess two stars at the back end of their careers kind of being taken away from us a little bit to start the year.
Well, Verlander's also, what, 42 now this year?
41 or 42. Yeah, 41.
So, and I mean, just reading what was said yesterday, his manager, which I completely forgot Dusty Baker retired until I read this, and they were like, manager Joe Espada. And I was like, wait a minute, Dusty Baker's not there? I was like, oh, yeah, he retired. It said that it was previously reported that he was behind in spring training due to a shoulder issue, and he had yet to appear in a game or even throw live BP, which, I mean, at the beginning of the season and even maybe on days that they didn't want, you know, starters to throw, like you saw Glasnow, you saw Max Fried. Who else did we see? We saw, like, Zach Eflin do this a bunch of times too. Guys that they didn't want to throw in the actual game were just on the backfields throwing to hitters for live BP. That's where we saw the Ohtani, you know, highlights and everything too from the beginning of the spring training. But yeah, I mean, him and Scherzer. Scherzer's still dealing with that Terrace Major issue, I think.
Yeah.
That kind of kept him limited last year when he went to Texas. But yeah, I mean, Texas is in a better position, I think, and so is Houston, actually, too, with Hunter Brown and Urquidy and Valdez and all that, and all those guys, and Framber Valdez, yeah. But yeah, I mean, going back to your point, too, with the Mets, like, why would you not sign these guys to this year, knowing that you said 2025 and beyond were going to be the years to compete? Why would you not have these guys under contract? Yeah, I get it. It's going to be a year or two into the deal before you feel like you're ready to compete. But if you have these guys under contract, you don't have to try to go out and get these guys. If you get a Jordan Montgomery, who I think is going to be a little cheaper than Blake Snell and maybe have a little more longevity than Blake Snell, but if you have him to pair with Kodai Senga, and then maybe one of your prospects comes up and starts firing away, or you just make a trade at the deadline, you know, for, you know, Brandon Woodruff for a Blackburn from the A's or somebody like that, a team that's underperforming, and you can make a playoff run this year, why would you not do it with the young core that you're about to bring up with Brett Beatty, Mark Vientos, Alvarez, all those guys.
Here's the weird thing about the Mets, too. Well, not the weird thing. Here's the bad thing about the Mets. This Senga injury was the same injury that Johan Santana had, which basically ended his career. So who knows when Senga's going to come back, or if, to be quite honest with you. Because, like, this is a way bigger injury than people may seem. But I agree with you, you know. Just think about the Mets, that big core five that they had. Harvey, Wheeler, DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Steven Matz. Matt Harvey was the first one to come up in 2012. They sucked in 2012. He had his all-star year in 2013. Zach Wheeler got called up for the first time in 2013. The Mets sucked. 2014, Jacob DeGrom and Zach Wheeler were headlining the rotation. DeGrom won Rookie of the Year. Mets were bad. Syndergaard and Matz came up the next year. Mets went to the World Series. Boom. So it's not like you just magically, you know, sign these guys and immediately that year they're going to make the playoffs or go on a big run. Like, it takes time, you know. Like, I'm just saying this as a hypothetical because he wasn't on the World Series roster this year. But even though Madison Bumgarner was terrible last year, the Diamondbacks made the World Series. You know, imagine if he was still under contract or pitching with Arizona. You know, that's what, the fourth or fifth year of that deal where they were finally good? It's just a hypothetical because it didn't actually happen, but it definitely could have. So, yeah, you know, the Mets are also confusing too. They're being really cheap this year. And maybe this is the offseason for the cheap. Who knows?
Yeah, and you think about it, just looking at some of the guys that they might have rotation-wise, you got Joey Lucchesi, Adrian Hauser, Sean Manaea, who, did you see a picture of Sean Manaea? Chopped off all of his hair.
Yeah, that was crazy. Weird.
Maybe he's going to have a Jacob DeGrom type of resurgence now. Because, I mean, DeGrom did the same thing.
Yeah.
Started throwing a billion miles an hour. You still got Tyler McGill. Let's see, Jose Quintana, if he's not traded at some point this year. And Luis Severino, who could possibly be, what did I say, five names? So Kodai Senga's out. So now you're left with Severino, Quintana, McGill, Manaea, Lucchesi, and Hauser. So that's six names to fill five spots. And then maybe you move McGill and Lucchesi, maybe even Manaea into the pen.
Yeah. Well, look, the Mets rotation is deep. Don't get me wrong. Like, I don't think they're going to have a problem filling in the spots of the rotation. The problem is that all of these guys are on one-term deals, they're not going to be here past August. Especially the way the Mets front office is expecting the season to go. So why not bring somebody in who you can have eyes on for the future? Or have eyes on for a guy who could start game one of a postseason series instead of, you know, potential reclamation projects. All right, here's Luis Severino trying to revive his career. Here's Adrian Hauser on his last legs. Here's Jose Quintana, who's a reliable number four on any team who is 99.9% going to get traded at the deadline. It's just, and that includes the position players too. I mean, look at all the position players they have. Harrison Bader, there's no shot he's going to be on the team past August. Joey Wendell.
Starling Marte. You
know, Starling Marte, I think, has two more years left on his deal, but he's another guy who, you know, they could let walk. Let's say he has a good year. You know, they could trade him too. Pete Alonso in his last year right now. That's the big controversy that nobody's talking about.
We kind of buried the lead when we came to the Mets, because what are they going to do with Alonso? This is the last deal of the last year of his contract, or the last year before he's a free agent next year for the first time. And he's going to want some money. And you're paying Francisco Lindor.
I've always said this about New York City, and I'm going to just use an analogy, that if a team were to win a championship in this city, it would be the Knicks that would burn the city down. But if Pete Alonso doesn't re-sign with the Mets, I think the city might burn down for bad reasons. I mean, you look at how much pain this organization has had to deal with in terms of not retaining franchise guys that haven't worked out. I was watching they did a little mini Gary Carter documentary, right, right after he died. It's called The Kid. Great doc, by the way. And think about all the superstars that they've had in the past. Daryl Strawberry, who's like Mets lore. They didn't re-sign him. He went on to go win 3 championships with the Yankees. David Wright, hurt. Mike Piazza wasn't a lifelong Met. Acts like it could have been. Jose Reyes, you know, they did. He won a batting title, and they didn't elect to re-sign him. He had a nice little swan song coming back, but he was not a lifelong Met. Tom Seaver, traded. Matt Harvey, bad ending. Jacob DeGrom, didn't want to be here. I can go on. I mean, I'm running out of names here, but I can go on. But it's going to be another guy that is a superstar and loves being a Met that the Mets won't keep. There's no way. This is not an Aaron Judge situation where, you know, he goes on to hit 62 home runs and then gets offered $40 million a year. The Mets don't operate like the Yankees. They are the furthest thing from the Yankees. There is no shot that Pete Alonso is a Met after this year. And I don't mean to be negative. I'm a Yankees fan, but you know what? I root for the Mets' success. It's great when both teams are having success in this city, but there is no way on earth that Pete Alonso will be a Met next year. He's going to go into this year as an FU year. He's going to go out, he's going to hit 45 home runs, and he's going to go sign with the Colorado Rockies. There it is.
Hey, I mean, that's maybe what the Rockies need. But speaking of somebody that did get paid, real quick before we transition to some college baseball, the Phillies gave Wheeler a pretty hefty contract extension, 3 years, $126 million, the highest annual salary for an extension. I did the math so that you guys don't have to. That's $42 million a year for the next 3 years. Talking about former Met pitcher that's gone on to do great things outside of the orange and blue pinstripes. But yeah, Zach Wheeler had an amazing season last year. He's actually been one of the really good pitchers since he's gone over to Philly in, 2020?
Yep.
I believe was the first year of that deal. So now this will be, after this 3 years, he'll have been a Philly, I think, longer than he was a Met. So I think this will be 7 or 8 total years that he's going to be a Philadelphia Philly, and he's going to retire as a Philly. I don't think he'll get another contract after this. He's getting pretty up there in age, and he's throwing a lot of innings. But, I mean, it's a good thing for the Phillies, who re-signed Aaron Nola on a 7-year deal. Now you keep Zach Wheeler along with you, and then you kind of just trickle down and fill in the other spots with a Taiwan Walker and a Ranger Suarez and guys like that. I know they have – oh, my gosh. What's their top prospect that's trying to come up? Forgot a name off the top of my head. His last name starts with a P.
I am not Priester. That well-versed in the Phillies farm. I know he's one of the Andrew top Painter.
Prospects. Andrew Painter, that's where he was.
Is one.
Yeah. That was, I think he had Tommy John surgery last year, though, so he's going to be a little behind. Or he might have had it. No, he had it last season. I just don't remember what time he had it last season. But yeah, I mean, that could be a really good rotation. Bullpen is going to be what's iffy. I know they lost Kimbrel, obviously. They didn't really re-sign him. I mean, I don't know if they lost him or anything. They lost Kimbrel. I don't believe they have Alvarado back still. They got Colby Allard in a trade this year, but really Sir Anthony Dominguez is the only other guy. Jeff Hoffman's been good for them as of late. Orion Kirkering. But other than that, just kind of looking around. Gregory Soto, maybe. Matt Strom was really good. Spencer Turnbull, I forgot they had. They can put him in the rotation as well if they don't want to put, a Hoffman or even like a Taiwan Walker in the rotation. But, I mean, that should be a really, really good team, and they should be vying for an NL East trophy again this year. But, again, $126 million for 3 years for one Zach Wheeler. And I believe that's all of the major league news we have. Oh, Paul Skeens as well, starting the season in the minors, not going to be making the big league club. I texted you that yesterday, Harrison. I was like, it makes sense because he only had 5 starts last year, but I think he could have very easily had another couple of starts in spring training with the big club and maybe even found a way to make it out of spring training with the big club. Three innings, one hit, three strikeouts.
Yeah, they said he'll stay in big league camp for a little while longer, but won't start the season in the show, which is the right call. I mean, he only pitched 6 2/3 pro innings after his time at LSU, so that's not nearly enough innings to be ready to face pro hitters. Look, high A is a different ball game than college baseball, and we want to gush over these college guys all we want, and as we should, but The guy needs to see some pro hitters in some pro ballparks before, he makes it to the show. I do believe he'll be in the big leagues at some point this year. I do, just not the start. It's kind of expected that. And Matt Chapman also signed with the Giants. So
I don't know if we talked about that last podcast. I think we touched on it a little bit.
3 of 54. That's kind of the latest big signing, I guess. Eddie Rosario just signed with the Nationals today. So, yeah, that's been it. So we're just waiting on those two pitchers, really, which who knows if we're going to get them this year. And, that's big league baseball for you.
Yeah, other than that, I don't think there's any really big free agents now left to sign other than those two lefties that we're still hearing about. And speaking of big-time lefty performers, have yourself a day, Riley Hughes.
Yeah, baby. Big South. Winthrop. Big South.
Big South.
The Eagles.
20 strikeouts for Mr. Riley. 7 2/3 innings. One hit. Two walks. Winthrop ended up getting the win, but 20 of the 23 outs that Riley Hughes got were strikeouts. It was the most in a single Division I game since 2017. David Peterson of Oregon and J.P. Sears of the Citadel, who I've heard of J.P. Sears because he's with the Athletics. I don't know where David Peterson is. Is he with?
He's on the Mets.
He is on the Mets. Okay, that's what I thought. But most in the D1 game since 2017 when those two guys did it. I mean, absolutely incredible. You talk about the Big South, I think, every chance that you get.
You never know what can happen in the Big South, baby. But I have this tweet that I wanted to share with you because this is fascinating. So I don't know if you follow him. Pitching Coach U is the name of the account on Twitter. So he broke down the outing. And this is something that I haven't seen, especially because this is the Big South we're talking about, right? So they broke down his pitch usage and swing and miss rate. So 44% swing and miss, which is outstanding. 36% usage of his fastball, 44% usage of his breaking ball, and 20% usage of his changeup. So this isn't Paul Skeens blowing 102 by anybody. This is crafty, Andy Pettit-like lefty with 20 Ks. I mean, I guess you could say, he wasn't a lefty, but Kerry Wood was not the hardest throwing pitcher, but he did have 20 Ks in a game back in the day with the Cubs. But anyways, yeah. Wonderful performance. Winthrop got a sweep of the University of Maine. Riley Hughes, National Pitcher of the Week, and now the NCAA leader in strikeouts. That's over. Hagen Smith, we were raving about his performance last week, and now it's his Riley Hughes' turn. So I guess, Big South play is going to open up next weekend. And I'm excited to see if he has any more performances like this, especially in a conference where, I won't be a homer here. Bats aren't that great. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of really good, not conference matches, but just matchups in general. We were talking about Dallas Baptist and Alabama, I believe. Did Baptist win that series?
Yes.
I believe they did. So Baptist won the series. Clemson over South Carolina. That was a really good series. And then you also had, what was the other one that we were talking about?
We had
Texas Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and then Florida and Miami.
Yeah, well, Florida won that series. Kind of destroyed them on Sunday.
Yes.
Trying to find the box score for them. Yes, for as much as I use ESPN I absolutely hate their college. What's the word I'm looking for?
Baseball coverage.
Yeah, their college baseball coverage. I absolutely hate it. You can barely find some of the box scores. Some of the scores aren't even correct. Some of the scores don't even show up. But Sunday, Jack Caglione, 11 Ks over 6 innings with 2 walks and 3 hits. He is further solidifying himself as not only a Golden Spikes Award watch list member, but also a top 5 draft pick to watch. Nicky Kurtz hit a couple of home runs over this weekend that I saw. He's trying to fight for that number one spot. The only other guy that I really haven't heard of has been J.J. Weatherholt.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's just because I haven't been really following West Virginia baseball that long, or he just hasn't been having that good of a season so far. But he's really the only top name that I have not heard from this season as far as, you know, okay, he's further solidifying himself as a top 5 pick.
And J.J. Weatherholt is the projected number one overall pick dating back to December by everybody. MLB.com, Baseball America, Perfect Game. This season, you know, he hasn't played since the 19th of February. And, you know, I know the college baseball, they don't really disclose injuries a lot, but if you haven't played since February 19th, oh, here we go. Yeah, he's dealing with a little bit of a hamstring injury right now. So yeah, it's a day-to-day thing, so he hasn't played in about 3 weeks, so that is, that's that.
That would explain it. I just did find his stats in 4 games this year. He's batting .308, 4 hits and 13 at-bats. He's got a double, scored 5 times, stole 3 bases, and struck out twice while walking 3 times. So, had a, I guess, good start to the season, you can say, for 4 games. This was a guy last year that hit .449, though, with 16 home runs and 60 RBIs. So you can see where the hype is coming from.
Yeah.
But now we've kind of moved on to the Chase Burns, the Josh Hartles, the Nick Kurtz, the Jack Cagliones of the world.
Like to me, you know, a shortstop's a shortstop, but there's nobody who screams number one overall pick like Jack Caglione. I mean, how do you not? Two-way guy with loads of power and 100-mile-an-hour fastball from the left side. I mean, does that not scream number one to you?
No, especially in this day and age where last year, I forgot who they drafted, but the Giants drafted somebody that they actually called a two-way player. Mm-hmm. Before it was a, you know, draft a first baseman, and they said, oh, by the way, he can also throw 99 miles an hour off the mound, or they draft a pitcher, and it's like, oh, by the way, he also hit, you know, 15 home runs in high school this past season. So it was for the first time they actually drafted a two-way player. And in this day and age with Shohei Ohtani doing what he did, he's going to be paving the way for a lot of these guys like Caglione, who, you know, is a really good left-handed batter that is going to probably produce you about 25, 30 home runs a year. But, oh, by the way, he can either be your closer and be in a role as Chapman, you know, come in from the bullpen and throw 99 to 102. But then also he could be a starter and go 6 innings and strike out 11 guys.
And he hits the baseball just as hard. I mean, I was watching the game on Sunday, and he had a couple hits. They were singles, but man, does this guy just mash the ball. You know how Giancarlo Stanton, when he makes hard contact, you know, I know he's only hit 190 these days, but, you know, this guy with exit velo, you know, 115 plus when he barrels baseballs up for just singles. This is what all these new jockey baseball kids are in love with these days, the exit velocity. I was never a fan of it. But, you know, if you're hitting the ball 110 plus off the bat, line drives, especially with power like Jack, I mean, this is the kid who screams number one to me. Yeah, talented shortstops are one thing, and, you know, maybe a guy with really good stuff is another, but this is a two-way guy. You know, everyone would dream of having a Shohei-like player on their team, and, you know, who knows if in the future Jack may go one way or the other, but, you know, it doesn't look like he's stopping at either anytime soon.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, nowadays everybody in high school is going to be pitching and they're going to be hitting. Very few people are going to do what I did, and just to use me as an example, I knew I was a better pitcher than I was hitter. I still did both in high school, but I cared more about pitching. A lot of these kids now, knowing that they can play both ways in college, because once you get to college, it usually got very,
what's the word I'm looking for?
Very, either way, you either picked one or the other. You picked hitting or you picked pitching. Not a whole lot of guys are being able to do that unless you are Jack Caglione, who can hit you 33 home runs and lead the nation in home runs, and then also, you know, spot up 99 on the corner. But now I think you're going to see a lot more guys go from high school and go to college or go into pro ball, depending on where they get drafted, and go, no, I still want to try to do both because I'm really good at both. You see this with a lot of shortstops, a lot of shortstops that are really good defensively, but they can also get on the mound and throw 92 to 95. And especially in the day and age where pitching has become so prominent for guys that can throw 98 plus, that if you can do that, but then also bat 400 for your college team, you're going to do that. You're going to do both. You're going to play shortstop for 7 or 8 innings. You're going to go in the bullpen. You're going to come in and throw 98 and close the game out. I mean, we've seen that a bunch throughout the years. We just haven't seen Caglione, where he's also starting in college. It's usually a reliever or so that comes out. But I think you're going to start to see it a lot more, and the sport is now going to be filled with a lot of two-way guys. Brendan McKay, who is just now back with the Rays, was trying to do that in 2017. I actually saw him live, and he looked just like Shohei Ohtani before Ohtani blew up and before Caglione. He could hit it 700 feet. And then also give you 5 innings of two-hit baseball and strikeout 7, right? It just, things didn't work out health-wise in the major leagues. But if everything had gone well, the Rays were talking about using him as a two-way guy, putting him at first base and then pitching him, you know, maybe not to the extent of Ohtani where he's DHing every day and he's also pitching every fifth or sixth day. But I think to your point, I think we're going to see it a whole lot more. Because especially if Caglione is the number one pick and he does well in pro ball and sticks to it all the way through, because it's not Ohtani where he's coming over and right away he's in the show and he's doing both things. It's Caglione's going to have to go to AA, going to have to go to AAA. He's going to have to do this for a lot of years before he gets up to the big leagues. And if he can have success, then I think that's where really the success of the two-way player is going to come from.
Totally agree, and the scouts are all over it. Speaking of things that scouts are all over, Friday night probably is the best pitching matchup we're going to get of the year in college baseball. ACC play begins. Duke faces off against Wake Forest, which means we get a battle of two of the best lefties in college baseball. Jonathan Santucci and Josh Hartle will be throwing on that Friday night in Winston-Salem at the couch. And Peter, I truly do think this is the best pitching matchup of the year. Santucci hasn't given up a run yet. He's coming off an outing where he struck out 14 guys over 6 innings and gave up just 1 hit. Josh Hartle gave up 2 runs on 5 hits his last time out, pitched 6 innings, still really effective for Josh. And we knew how effective he was in ACC play last year. So having a good start to his year here in 2024. And, you know, one of my colleagues, Darren Vaught, who hosts the ACC Baseball Etc. podcast for D1 Baseball, he's actually calling that game on Friday night, and he sent out a tweet today that the scouting requests for the ballpark on Friday are apparently through the roof. So that's going to be one with a lot of radar guns and a lot of eyes on it. Duke, by the way, coming off a 28-2 win over App State, I believe it was. And that's not easy. That's an App State team that can hit. Duke hit 11 home runs and scored 16 runs in the fifth inning.
Yeah, and it's a Wake Forest team that just got by Georgetown. So,
yes.
I mean, you're talking about, I think that might be, can that be the early, you know, series of the year award as well? So where you're going to...
It definitely can.
You have a really good Duke offense that has just been tearing the cover off the ball, going up against, you know, two of the potential top 5 picks in this year's draft, and Chase Burns on Saturday and Josh Hartle on Sunday. And then you got Santucci going into that ballpark where, like you said, it's a bandbox that a fly ball to center field with, you know, a fart could go out. So can we put that as early series of the year watch?
I said it at the beginning of the year that Duke and Wake Forest is what the ACC was going to come down to. No question. And I think I've been proven correct, at least to start. I mean, I know Florida State got off to a good start. NC State, you know, I think is severely overrated. You know, Carolina's been okay. Virginia's obviously been really good. I think if there's a third team to throw in there, I think it's Virginia. But to me, these are the two best teams in the ACC. And two of the best pitchers going to square off. And the fact that they're throwing from the left side too, I think is just, it makes it even better. It's fantastic. As a lefty myself, just a dream. I think it's going to be series of the year for sure. I just don't think there's two teams that stack up better against each other like Duke and Wake Forest. Now, the advantage here goes to the Deacs, obviously, just because of the ballpark. Duke playing their home games this year at Jack Coombs Field. They've been splitting time between where the Durham Bulls play and whatever. Jack Coombs Field is a big yard. That is not an easy place to hit a home run. And Wake Forest, the environment that they create there is unlike a lot of places in the league. So, yeah, this is going to be a big deal. The Wake Forest offense, you know, I feel like hasn't awoken to the way that we're accustomed to seeing. You know, Nick Kurtz only has, you know, a couple homers this year. I think he was last check batting like somewhere under 250. Adam Tellier, the new third baseman, has kind of been the big bright spot for them. And then Duke, you know, had a couple transfers. You know, Logan Bravo, the kid from Harvard's batting 426. Ben Miller's batting 500. That's in 48 at bats too. He's got 7 homers and 18 ribbies. So I mean, these are two juggernauts facing off. So I'm specifically excited to watch Friday night. But I think all weekend, great series.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to look through Duke's stats right now, too. You got Devin Obie in 12 games, batting 476 with 5 home runs and 16 RBIs. Zach Morris, the graduate transfer, in 12 games, 311 with 6 home runs and 15 RBIs. So this is a really good Duke offense right now that I know you said it's App State, but they are beating up on a lot of inferior opponents right now. And we've seen that throughout the whole, you know, first half of the season before conference play. So, I mean, it's really going to come down to what they do in conference. And I mean, to your point, Jonathan Santucci in 3 innings has not given up a run yet. Or excuse me, in 3 starts has not given up a run yet. He's pitched 2 shutouts, 31 strikeouts. Kyle Johnson in 4 appearances has a 0 ERA. So their pitching staff and their offense have kind of benefited from the lack of opposition that they've been playing so far this year. So I think this could make it to where, okay, can we see if Duke is for real? Can Devin Obie lead this team? The guys that you were talking about, can Santucci actually perform in conference? You know, is it going to actually be Wake Forest and Duke, or is Duke just going to be one of those middle of the road ACC teams that looked really good in the beginning of the season and it just kind of falters out because conference play was too hard for them?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the ACC stats this year and Duke is actually blowing Wake Forest out of the water. I mean, Duke is 2nd in the ACC in team batting average. They lead the ACC in team ERA at 229. And that's a conference last year where the two leaders in the nation for a good chunk of the year were Wake Forest and Virginia. And by the way, the Deacs in team batting average, 13th out of 14 ACC teams. Now they're hitting 287, which is still better than a lot of teams in the country, but in that conference, definitely a little bit of a low mark. So, you know, Duke obviously leading the conference in home runs as well with 35. So I think this is going to be a bigger test for Wake Forest now looking at the numbers. Like, we know what the pitching can do, but can the offense really bring it to life? And, you know, I think it definitely can. Like, we're just kind of waiting for Nick Kurtz to really get going here. You know, the complimentary pieces have gotten going. You know, Marek Houston's been a good piece. Tellier's been a great piece. Jack Winne, who only started 2 games last year, he's already got 6 homers for Wake, being their everyday left fielder. Jake Reinisch has had a nice response year after hitting under 200 last year. So we're just waiting for Nick Kurtz to get going here, really. You know, that's kind of the big kicker. But Duke, just a fantastic start overall.
Yeah, and we're talking about, you know, just talking about their schedule. Not only are they playing the number one team in the country in Wake Forest this year, they get 2 midweeks against Rider, and then they play number 10 Clemson. for a three-game series. And then they have to go to NC State for three games. And then, oh, by the way, Virginia comes into town. So that's the number 10 team, the number 14 team. And then they have to play Campbell, which is the number 22 team on a midweek. And then a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, number 13 Virginia comes to town. So that is going to be a really good test for Duke the first couple of weeks, where they're playing the number one, what did I say, the number one, the number 10, the number 14, the number 22, and the number 13 team in the country. Now you get the advantage of playing two of those series at home. You go to NC State, you go to Wake Forest, but Clemson comes to you, Campbell comes to you, and Virginia comes to you before Miami comes, and then you have to go to Pittsburgh, which Pittsburgh has been up and down this year so far to begin ACC play. They've been really bad for the last couple of years.
Pitt's actually had a decent start to the year from what I saw. I think they just won like a little mini tournament baseball-wise. But yeah, in comparison to the rest of the conference, they are nowhere near, you know, any of these other teams.
But yeah, that's gonna be an interesting start to conference play for Duke. And like I said, we're really gonna realize quickly whether or not beating up on Georgetown, Akron, Northwestern was actually because they're that good, or just because their opponents, and I hate to say this, were just inferior to them.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, the ACC is a tough conference. I'm glad I kind of got my feet wet into that last couple years. Because, you know, nobody's really talking about LSU all that much lately. You know, I know they had their big series at Minute Maid Park last weekend, where, you know, Tommy White did his thing. So, yeah, you know, this is going to be a good weekend. Pitt, by the way, 8-1 to start the year.
Yeah,
so,
they just had to cancel their home opener. I'm trying to find their schedule, but they're kind of – here we go.
Well, they played North Carolina to start, so that's always a tough test. And then Boston College, which, you know, they could hang. Then you go Virginia, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech. So this is doable schedule for Pitt. And you know, I got to see them a couple years ago. Mike Bell's their coach, and he runs a good operation. And that is a well-oiled machine that they have there. There's just a lot of talent in this conference, man. Like, I know Pitt can hit. I've seen it with my own two eyes. But can they, you know, be a giant like some of these other teams? I don't know.
I will say one thing they are leading the nation in right now is, there we go, terrible user-friendly website on the phone. Just terrible. Absolutely terrible. So, but 10-18 in conference, what I was trying to find last year, 24-31 overall. I think the only team that finished worse, when I was doing my Louisville notes, I think Florida State was the only team that finished worse than Pitt and Louisville last year in conference, and it was only by a game. So, yeah, and North Carolina is not a fun team to face for your first go around in conference this year. By the way, Louisville, just absolutely terrible in every sport that they were good in just like 5 years ago. Their basketball team.
I think Louisville is. Has Louisville become the most irrelevant sports school in the last year or so?
I mean, since.
I mean, you think about the rise and fall. I mean, the thing that I remember Louisville for was hosting the ACC tournament in 21 for baseball and Kevin Ware having a shin bone stick out of his leg.
Yeah, because you got to think, you had Lamar Jackson. I don't mean to get graphic. You had Lamar Jackson and Brendan McKay as your stars. You also had Henry Davis a couple of years ago. What was that, 2019? Because when did he get drafted? 2021?
Yeah, drafted in 21. So,
2018, 2019. So, but. They are, I think, who did they just lose to? Oh, man. I don't know. They looked okay in USF. They lost three games, though, by one run. So I think at one point, yeah, I'm trying to find it real quick. Oh, wow. Pitt, Duke doesn't play Louisville this year. Okay. I think at one point they didn't have a single win, though, yet.
and like their basketball team. I know we're a baseball podcast, but their college basketball team has been terrible this year. They're dead last in the conference or second to last in the conference. And it's just not looking good for Louisville at all.
No. No, not at all. Yeah. Irrelevant. They're dead to me.
I mean, have you been to their field, though? Because their field is...
I have not.
Spectacular.
It's nice. I've seen it. You know, I've seen it on TV and stuff. But I have not been there now.
So 7-4 this year are Louisville. They just lost to Morehead State. That was the team. They lost to Xavier, to St. Bonaventure. They lost to... was it? No, they play him this week. They played him yesterday. Oh, but it got postponed to today. But yeah, they have just not been looking good. It took them. They were 0-5 before they finally beat St. Bonaventure 21-3 in 7 innings.
Dang.
So, anyways, just not good. Let's see. Any midweeks?
Yeah, not very good. I will say, you know, you touched on the Wake Forest Georgetown. That was actually one that I watched in full, and a heck of a game. I mean, Georgetown goes up 6-2, and you just, you know, a 4-run deficit for the Deacs is just, you know, it's not enough. They were always in that game.
A couple of good matchups yesterday.
Any midweek upsets?
Like we said, Wake Forest won 11-9 over Georgetown. Arkansas over Central Arkansas 9-7. Texas Tech going to New Mexico, winning 11-8. What was the game that I was watching yesterday? Oh, I told you, Utah Tech.
UNCG.
Utah Tech, the 1-11 Utah Tech beating Oklahoma State 9-8.
And how about UNCG hitting 2 grand slams in back-to-back innings to beat the High Point Panthers last night, 13-5? I just had to put it out there. But 2 grand slams in back-to-back innings, pretty impressive. You know, I will say, pretty impressive.
North Carolina beat Campbell 7-3.
Yeah, that was a good game. Carolina TCU scored the 4 runs. It was tied going into the ninth. They're 13-0.
TCU 13-0. That offense is really good. They only won 4-0 yesterday, but that offense is mashing right now.
You know, I wish I stayed up late to watch TCU baseball. I just, you know, don't have it in me right now. But I might have to start.
Yeah.
Because are they the only undefeated team in the country left? I feel like there's
Florida
a few
Florida State
more,
is, too.
That's right.
They're still undefeated. And there's a couple of mid-majors that are still undefeated, too. I just don't know. The game I really wanted to watch, couldn't because it was, you know, behind a paywall, Texas A&M at Texas.
Yes, Texas A&M is the other team that is undefeated.
They don't have a loss?
They do not. Unless they lost yesterday, because these things don't update.
No, yesterday they beat Texas 9-2.
I see that. So, yeah, they are undefeated.
Yeah, I was trying to watch that game, but it was behind a paywall.
Let's see. Oh,
your favorite team to root for in the top 25, USCB, or UCSB, Santa Barbara.
How they're back in the top 25 is I saw that the other day.
This is according to ESPN.
So
they don't know what they're talking
about. Santa Clara, 5-2.
All right. At least, you know, I don't get it.
And then what about this? I don't know if you saw this. Who was it?
Southern Miss, Mississippi State. Yesterday, Mississippi State won 5-4, and apparently, I didn't watch the game, but I saw like some of the interview clips with Butler from Southern Miss, talked about how he was transferring over because he wanted to play in meaningful games. Did you see that whole thing about how Mississippi State was like pointing to the state part of it? And obviously, both of them are in Mississippi, so it's a little bit of a rivalry, and he kind of got a little butthurt about them doing that at the end of the game. You didn't see that at all?
Didn't see that. I'll have to take a peek at it.
So Butler for Southern Miss, after the game, I guess talking to like whatever students have their cameras, you know, it's usually like the SID or the you know, students for whatever program they're in.
Student creatives. Yeah.
And he's talking about how he decided to transfer to Southern Miss because he knew they would be playing meaningful games and that Mississippi State, you know, basically would be losing to mid-major teams, you know, in midweeks. Like, they're basically just kind of like
crapping all over what Mississippi State did. And I would just like thought to myself, it's like, dude, like have some feel. Like you guys are both from the state of Mississippi. Like they just won 5-4. All they're doing is just pointing to the state part. It's like, it's me the same thing. Like if you guys had won and you were pointing to the Mississippi part of Southern Miss, like, wouldn't you be doing the same thing? So I just don't understand. I didn't understand.
It's just like last year when Texas State beat Texas and they did the horns down. Or was that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, I love that. I think it's great.
So anyways, if I find it, I'll send it to you. But I kind of just had to talk about, like, it was weird. It was like, I don't understand why they were getting like that when if you guys would have won. It's a rivalry type game.
Like something, I don't know.
Anyways, let's talk about some games that are going on today.
I just saw Auburn just hit a mammoth home run to, I think it was Cooper Weiss just went off the top of the scoreboard in left center field to give the Tigers a 3-1 lead over Air Force in the bottom of the second. Stephen Schock with the tweet, legend. That's all I got.
Yeah, and Virginia is also beating George Washington 4-0 in the bottom of the first.
Nice.
So we say that at, you know, 2:51 on a Wednesday. So hopefully you guys are listening to this later tonight because that's when this will be posted. Let's see. Duke plays Georgetown. Actually, that was postponed, so never mind. Number 11, East Carolina at VCU. Or VCU goes to East Carolina, I should say. South Carolina upstate at 18, Coastal Carolina.
Never know. USC upstate, baby. Big South.
Oregon Grand Canyon. That could be a sneaky good midweek. Let's see. FGCU goes to Florida State today. UCF goes to Florida. That could be interesting. UCF just beat USF this weekend in their three-game series. Two games to three. Let's see. Miami's probably going to get blown out by Stonehill, which will be fun to watch. And that's really all of the midweeks. Memphis versus Ole Miss could be interesting, just because Ole Miss sucks now. And that's really it. And then Friday, like you said, was the big series. Other than that, there's not. I mean, Notre Dame plays Virginia Tech. That's a big ACC series. Bucknell plays Campbell.
And the High Point Panthers play Rutgers at the Greensboro Grasshoppers field in Greensboro, North Carolina. There's my plug.
There you go. Other than that, that's Texas plays Texas Tech in a Big 12 series. That could be interesting. That actually should be really interesting. And that's really the big series of the week.
I want to get into my young lad of the week and get over with real quick because I feel like, you know, not enough people are talking about this gentleman who hails from the Campbell University up in Buies Creek, North Carolina, which, by the way, I don't know if you've ever been to Buies Creek. That is one of the most miserable places in the country. And I love North Carolina, but that place is just atrocious looking. Grant Nipp, a transfer from Alabama, has just been an all-out stud this year. We neglected the fact that in that first midweek of the year against East Carolina, the kid hits a homer and drives in four runs. He hit a grand slam and then came in and threw a scoreless inning and closed the game. But he has hit safely in every game but one this year. And he's batting .486 with seven homers. So again, I keep mentioning Campbell. You know, they're number 22 in the country now. For a roster that is so, you know, unrecognizable from years past, this kid's pulling the slack. And, you know, he's doing a little bit of both. Not saying he's a dominant pitcher, but you know what? When called upon, listen, Zach Neto did the same thing. I mean, how many people could say they watched Zach Neto pitch in college? I can. He got lit up, but it was fun. I'm going Grant Nipp, young lad of the week of the Campbell Camels. Hopefully they can stay in the top 25 because I know they lost their midweek to, UNC and, I really do think they're going to need a dominant sweep this weekend to stay in the top 25.
Well, I'm going to stay in the Big South. Obviously, when a pitcher does something really well, I can't overlook it just because I was a pitcher, and that is my position. So Riley Huge, 20 strikeouts in 7 2/3 innings, one hit, two walks. Nothing really else
Big
I
South.
To say. joins David Peterson and JP Sears, a couple of pro guys, by the way, for the 20 strikeouts in a single D1 game. So Riley Hughes of Winthrop. Yeah. Young lad of the week.
USC Upstate is going to upset Coastal Carolina today. There's Upstate my bold prediction. Upstate is going to upset?
I like it.
Yes.
I mean, hopefully it's better than the Blue Hose and the Clemson Tigers upset.
Hey, that was a close game, all right? They were up 2-1 at one point. They were up 2-1 at one point.
All right. And then how did it finish?
8-2.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
But, you know, think about it. If you don't let up 7 unanswered runs, you win the game.
Yeah, if only you didn't give up the first run.
That's a really dumb take. Yeah, that's a really dumb take. You can't, yeah, we get it. Big South, whatever. But yeah, all right, Wake Forest and Duke is the series to watch this weekend. So, you know, buckle up, purchase ESPN Plus if you haven't, and you just get excited, man. College baseball's here. Who cares about all these college basketball tournaments? It's not even the real NCAA tournament anyways. That's 11 days away. Nobody cares about the conference tournament. Just get me to the real thing. Baseball is what we need to watch.
Listen, USF AAC regular season champions, baby. First time in history.
Yeah. I saw that with the confetti flying. Yeah. What was it? Saturday night. Yeah. Good for them.
And then yesterday they just cut down the nets for for the championship trophy. So hopefully producing a lot of championship games for them. So soon.
There you go.
Women start on Sunday, 3:00.
Listen up, but Harris, you got anything to add before we start talking about
absolutely
college
nothing.
Basketball? March Madness is
absolutely
upon
nothing.
Us.
It is.
Good luck to.
I've set aside an extra $75 for the March Madness funds for brackets and other things.
I like it. If High Point makes it, I'm gonna put them as one of my bracket busters. In one of my brackets.
Yeah, listen, if High Point, if the men's team makes it, I do legitimately think that they could at least cover a spread in the first game. Now, the head coach is suspended for the first game of this Big South tournament tomorrow, so I don't know what's going to happen. You never know. But prayers up.
All right, I think it's time to end this podcast before we start going into
it's time to end it.
Betting and
yeah,
everything.
It's over. All right. Nobody cares about High Point basketball.
For Harris Eisenberg, I am Peter Chaffee Jr. saying so long. Thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you again next week.